Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family, finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. And now, here's Mary Donnellan on Mom Talk Radio.
Welcome to this 4th of July edition of Mom Talk Radio. This is Mary and from Maria, and it's such a pleasure to be behind the mic with you today. And it is the 4th of July week, and so happy 4th of July to everyone listening. And before we get into our show, I want to quickly thank our sponsor, Premama. And we want to talk about a new product Premama has launched called the Digestive Aid. It's a prenatal fiber and probiotic chew, vanilla and caramel flavored, and it supports healthy digestion and a healthy immune system during pregnancy, which is so important. So these are like, it's like a little caramel chew, and it gives you 1 billion CFUs of probiotics, 2 grams of fiber. It's vegetarian, it's naturally flavored, and it can help with digestive discomforts that are often associated with pregnancy. And as a mom of three, I can tell you, sometimes you'll get anything to help you. So this Premama Digestive Aid is available. Actually, just check it out on drinkpremama.com and check the store locator, because it is available online and in stores across the U.S. So to jump back into our 4th of July, I wanted to quickly mention that the historic trivia department of Mom Talk Radio has come up with a few fun facts about the July 4th holiday. And of course, it is the quintessential American holiday, and it's been a federal holiday since 1941, and celebrations have taken place from the beginning, even though it wasn't federally declared a day off, essentially, until 1941. But the oldest July 4th parade has been held in Bristol, Rhode Island, since 1785. And then this is another really fun and interesting coincidence, an amazing coincidence. John Adams, the second U.S. president, he actually wanted July 2nd to be the celebration of our independence, because that was when the Continental Congress ratified the Declaration of Independence, but it was signed on the 4th. So that's why the 4th won out. And he protested. Anytime he was asked to join July 4th celebrations, he didn't attend. He thought it should have been July 2nd. But the coincidence comes in when both John Adams, the second president, and Thomas Jefferson, our third president, both died on July 4th, 1826, the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. So John protested, but it didn't matter. And he ends up dying on the 4th, along with Thomas Jefferson, 50 years after it was ratified. So interesting. That's from the Mom Talk Radio Trivia Desk. And so let's get into our show. We have a great show lined up. We're going to be talking about money. This first guest is going to be really interesting, Kimberly Palmer. She is the author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom. And she is going to be talking about moms and our financial status. Are we doing what we can to spend wisely and set ourselves up to be financially sound. So that's going to be really interesting talk. And then we're going to be talking about playtime over the summer, whether it's structured or free play. And that's really important because our kids have a lot of free time in this next few weeks. And then we're going to be talking to another about another summer activity, summer reading. I know I just went down and downloaded my kids' summer books, and we have a lot to do this summer in terms of reading for all three of my kids. So we're going to be talking to Scholastic's editorial director about some summer reading ideas. And then we're going to round out the show. We are actually talking to the Spotlight on Moms. A mom of tween and teens is going to be talking about traveling over the summer with older kids. And then we're going to be joined by Dr. Mildred Payton, and she is going to be talking about bullying, which is a good subject to talk about any time of year, and it's an important topic to understand. So we will come back after this very quick break. We'll be joined by Kimberly Palmer. She is the author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom. Stay with us.
Mom's Little Secret. Mom Talk Radio.
We're back with this financial segment of Mom Talk Radio with Kimberly Palmer. Kimberly is the author of Smart Mom, Rich Mom, and she has previously been the senior money editor at U.S. News & World Report for 9 years and is currently an adjunct professor at American University, where she teaches a course on mastering social media. So that's an interesting topic. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Kimberly.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So tell us about Smart Mom, Rich Mom. Why do you think women and especially moms get shortchanged when it comes to advice on personal finance and wealth building?
Well, one thing I noticed writing about money for so many years and then being a mom myself is that so much of the articles and blog posts and ads that are aimed at us are really about relatively small things we can do, like couponing and saving a dollar here and there at the store, all things I do and are important, but it's really missing the bigger picture of building wealth. So doing things like saving for college, saving for our own retirements, even if we're taking a break or scaling back in the workplace. I mean, whatever our situation is, there are things we can do to build financial security, build wealth, and so that's what I wanted to focus on.
Right. So when did the book come out?
It just did a couple weeks ago in June.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
So how long did it, so from the beginning, you it sounds like you obviously have always been in writing about financial issues, et cetera. Has it always been about women and moms, or did you just, as you became a mom, realize that there was a need to talk about it?
Well, I think I've always just loved the topic of women and money. And then I felt like when I became a mom, everything changed in terms of how I related to money, because suddenly I felt a lot more pressure just to make sure I was making the right choices for my daughter and now my daughter and my son. And I just wanted to make sure I was doing things like college is the big one, getting set on that, making sure that we were always going to be able to, you know, afford the things that we wanted, go on family vacations. I mean, all of that takes a lot of planning. So to me, having a baby and becoming a mom just meant everything changed with my finances too, on top of everything else. And then at the same time, it was all this pressure. You know, I wanted to spend more time with my kids too. And so, you know, balancing work and family, all of that comes up when you talk about moms and money. So I just think it's such an interesting topic. I love talking to other moms about it and, you know, sharing tips and figuring out how we can make smart choices.
And does that cover it in the book? In other words, is it more of just stories or is it tips? Like, give us a little, just a glimpse into the book and,
sure,
and what it says.
Sure. So the book is divided into subjects by chapter. So yes, I address each of these topics. So how to save money in terms of your basic household budget, how to plan for things that like life insurance and writing a will, all of that important stuff that is not that fun to address, but very important for our families. And also then long-term saving and investing. So how can we save for college while we're also trying to pay all of these day-to-day bills, also trying to save for our emergency funds and retirement. So how to prioritize all of that. And then also I have a whole chapter on working and, you know, how the different choices we have in terms of scaling back, leaning in, all of that, and the different strategies moms use. So most of my experts that I quote and share stories from are other moms who have found really smart ways of doing it. So for example, for moms that are working full-time, how can we negotiate for the flexibility that we might need, that kind of thing. So it's all about, I think, sharing tips and stories that help us make good choices.
That sounds really, really great, because I actually have two very good friends in my book club. One is an attorney and one's a CPA, both moms, both, you know, same in the same boat as, you know, working and juggling. And we've all said that there is such a huge, from other women we talked to, I think there's just a huge information gap when it comes to women/moms and money. And I think it's, like you said, some things are difficult to talk about. And sometimes it's the last thing you want to do is talk about finances, but women need to be financially savvy and independent, I think.
Yes. I totally agree. And actually, one thing that really struck me as I was researching this book is that at some point in our lives, there's a 90% chance that we'll be the ones solely in charge of our family's money. Yeah, and I mean, that's just because of course, things like divorce and single motherhood, but also just the fact that women tend to outlive men. So there's all kinds of reasons to explain that. But the fact is, like, we have to be ready for that if we're not doing it already. So it's so important for us moms just to be comfortable managing our finances, knowing where all of our money is, staying organized with it, and then, you know, addressing even some of the more awkward things that are difficult to handle. I feel like when I'm out with my friends, they always end up asking me these kinds of money questions, and sometimes it's things like, okay, I know I need to write an estate plan or take out life insurance, but, you know, it's not that easy to figure out how to do. So this book is all about bringing that into the open and figuring out how we can do it.
Wonderful. So, and then you are, so you have two kids of your own. And I was actually just telling my kids when I had to go buy some books and for their summer reading, I'm like, you guys are expensive. You know? Kids are so expensive. And you just think to yourself, and I have teenagers too. So the college, like you kept mentioning college planning, that is huge right now for us.
Oh my gosh, it's huge. I feel like when I had my daughter, she's six now, my monthly bills just shot up. And then when I had my son, it basically doubled. It's just
right.
So crazy how expensive they are. I mean, my husband and I are always trying to figure out, you know, how do we spend so much on food? How can we cut back? What can we trim so we can really, you know, do the things we want to do, like save for college? So important to a lot of families. So it really comes down to first getting organized so you know where your money is and where your money's going. And then it just becomes easier when you need to do a quarterly check-in and review, are my long-term retirement investments in the right place? It's so much easier to do that and address those questions if you're organized. So I think that's a big part of it. And then just prioritizing and figuring out what is really important to you and your family, which is a lot about your values and, you know, how we talk to our kids about money, what we're modeling for them. All of that comes up.
Right. We have about 30 seconds. I really want to just jump in. You had mentioned the trend among women of pursuing kaleidoscope careers because a lot of moms, you know, whether you're a stay-at-home mom or you work at home or part-time, whatever, what does the kaleidoscope career and pursuing that mean to you?
Yeah, so this term actually comes out of academia. It's not something I invented. It comes from research on how women tend to manage their careers in a non-linear way. So basically, instead of just proceeding up the ladder like a traditional career path, we actually make things more, you know, we take twists and turns because we're trying to juggle multiple things like taking care of our children. So the kaleidoscope career, that term really speaks to that variety that we all take on as we navigate earning money and also caring for our families.
Wonderful. Really great to talk to you, Kimberly. And where can our listeners find your book?
Thank you so much for having me. My website is kimberly-palmer.com. And of course, the book, Smart Mom Rich Mom, is in bookstores and on Amazon.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And I think this is such a great topic. I see a series coming out. So thank you so much for joining us, Kimberly. And next up, we'll shine the spotlight on moms. Shannon Younger, the mom of a 13-year-old who blogs at betweenusparents.com. We'll be right back. We're shining the spotlight on moms and our guest, Shannon Younger. She is the mom of a 13-year-old and blogs at betweenusparents.com and tweets at Shannon Younger. And it's Shannon, is S-H-A-N-N-A-N. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Shannon.
Thanks so much for having me.
Good. So it's summertime and you have a teenager. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to do this summer and how you would, if you talk about the kind of things we do over the summer, if you talk about that thing on your blog.
You know, our summer is looking a little varied and full of good stuff. We are going to head out on a road trip to check out some new states where we've never been before and hopefully have some bonding time. I find that sometimes when your kids are in the car is when they're most willing to chat and open up, especially if they're in the back seat and you're not looking at them. So I'm hoping for some good connection and making some fun memories there. And then I work from home, which is always kind of an interesting balance in the summer. So trying to find ways to keep my kid busy, but also give her enough downtime. So she's doing everything from getting ready for the high school dance team that she made to going to computer programming camp.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I have the camp shuffle the last 2 weeks, and then obviously this week, July 4th, I'm going to be heading out on vacation. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting juggle in the summer because the camps aren't as long as a school day necessarily, and if you work at home, you've really got to make that keep them busy.
And I feel like this is kind of a tricky age group of, you know, 13, 14, 15. They're really busy and involved, which is exactly what you want them to be, but they're not driving yet, which is tricky.
Yes. They are busy. I thought, oh, when they were little, when they were younger, my children, I thought, oh, it's so busy and running around. It's nothing like teenagers that don't drive.
I had no idea.
I didn't either.
I thought the same thing.
I'm just thinking, what? I am just, I'm going to start a business called the Mom Uber and just drive kids around because that's really all I do.
Exactly. I want the cute little chauffeur hat and call it good.
Yeah. So tell us, so you have a 13-year-old. Actually, I have a 14 and a 16-year-old. Tech. Do you let your daughter bring her device and like on the road trip, or do you make her talk to you and look out the window like we had to do as kids? How do you handle and overall her tech usage on vacation?
You know, we really try and strike a balance. And the idea, too, is that, to be perfectly honest, I'm not willing or even able to give up all of my tech. I have some work commitments, and I enjoy using it to document our trips. So, you know, it feels only fair to let her have some. So we've agreed on a certain amount of time at night when we're in the hotel and winding down, people getting ready for bed, and maybe not everybody has a chance to use the bathroom that we're sharing, that kind of stuff. But otherwise, we have tried to block out large chunks of time that are tech-free, or at least disconnected. Maybe not tech-free, but not Instagramming and tweeting and texting. So one thing we're trying to do is also using tech to be creative. So we've agreed that she can have her phone, but it has to be in airplane mode and can do pictures and video. And I've asked her to be the family documentarian of the trip and to put together a video at the end when we get home. So that's a chance to use her creativity.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see her perspective, which I think will be great. And then, you know, just on the educational end, it feels like more and more school projects are make a video. So to help her work on her editing skills and getting really good and proficient at that, so when it is time to do a school project, she's not trying to figure out how to edit. She's had a little bit of experience doing that.
That's true. You know, my 16-year-old, he had to do two projects for an AP class last year, and both were submitted via video. So it was really interesting that it's obviously going to be just more and more of that kind of project method to submit for a grade. So
really,
that's a great idea. And you know what? We're going down to the Keys for a huge family vacation next week.
Oh, fun.
And I'm going to have there's a ton of teenagers in the room. So I'm just going to tell them that too. Like, you guys document our trip. That would be awesome, right?
Yeah, I think it would be. And I think it kind of motivates them to get creative. And, you know, if you're using tech for something positive, I think that's a good thing. So should be encouraged.
But airplane mode is the key. You made a good point. Airplane mode. So they can't get on and start, you know, just Snapchat and then go back over to Instagram and, oh, let me go take a few pictures.
Exactly.
That's what my 14-year-old would do.
A really old phone that doesn't have phone service. So I think we're just going to maybe switch to that one. So the video might not be the highest quality, but that's not the main point. So, but yeah
that's great.
Disabling the connected part, I think, is the key.
Right. So do you give, what do you talk about at BetweenUsParents.com?
We talk about pretty much everything related to raising tweens and teens. I started the blog when my daughter was 9 and I realized she wasn't little anymore, but she wasn't big either. So what do you do with this age group? I was a lawyer in my prior life and I love researching. So my theory was I'm going to be researching all this stuff anyway. So I'm happy to share the information.
Well, that's great. So it's BetweenUsParents.com, and you tweet at Shannon Younger. Shannon,
that's
have
right.
A wonderful vacation, a wonderful summer, and thanks so much for the great tips.
Have and a great time in the Keys. Thanks.
Thank you. And when we come back, we're joined by Heather Shoemaker. She's the author of It's Okay to Go Up the Slide. We'll be right back.
You succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
Let's talk about play and summer play. And I'm pleased to welcome the author of It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, Heather Shoemaker. Heather is a journalist whose writing has appeared widely in publications like Parenting, Pregnancy, and other publications. And her first book was It's Okay Not to Share and Other Renegade Rules for Raising Competent and Compassionate Kids. So Heather is an advocate of free, unstructured play. So let's talk to Heather about her new book. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So this book, is this an expanding on your first book, It's Okay Not to Share?
Yes, it's taking the preschool age and including that age, but also going into some of those early elementary years, particularly for new kindergartners and early elementary when families encounter some of the rules of school, like do your homework.
Right. And so homework is a really contentious issue. I know, at least in my, we're in South Florida. I know it's always, you know, we have the very, very pro homework side and the very con homework side. So where do you stand on that?
Right. Well, I think homework is appropriate at certain ages, and that's what the research is bearing out, is that the benefits of homework are highly age-dependent. So in high school, there's some benefit if it's not more than 2 hours a night. Middle school, very slight benefit. And in elementary school, they're finding no correlation between time spent on homework and academic achievement in elementary school. But what we're finding nationwide is that homework's coming younger and younger. It's very typical to have kindergartners coming home with homework. And if kids in preschool don't bring homework home, the parents often complain because they're worried their kids aren't getting the best of what they should be getting.
I think that comes, too, from, again, almost a competitive, you know, if they're not getting the best and they feel like they're going to fall behind, say, somebody else, you know, some other child in some other school or even nationally. Isn't that, do you agree with that?
Yeah. I think that it's a lot of fear-driven. I think what we need to remember in these early years is that, especially in the early years, is that learning is joy-driven. I mean, maybe not every moment every child wants to learn what we think they ought to learn at that age, but if we can put as much joy as possible, because kids are wired to learn. They love learning. But if we squelch it too young, that turns kids off, and they have 13 years of school ahead of them. So especially when you're starting out, to keep that joy alive.
Right. Very good point. So it's okay to go up the slide, your latest book. Tell us a little bit about the book, and does it cover these kind of discussions in the book about homework or playtime, school structure, et cetera?
Right. Well, just like the first book, it covers a range of topics because we're parenting a whole child and all kinds of issues come at us when we're raising kids. So It's Okay to Go Up the Slide covers topics that have to do with school, such as recess and homework, and things like that. And then it also covers princess play and risk-taking and why kids even go up the slide in the first place. It covers dealing with disasters in the news and how we deal with that and how we include sad stories in our children's lives. So it deals with emotional, social, academic, a whole range of topics for a family.
That's interesting because obviously this last couple weeks have been just fraught with terrible news on the television. And I have a 9-year-old and she is, it's this balance between wanting her to be protected, but yet not wanting to keep her in a vacuum. You know, I mean, we have to, so it's interesting that you do address that in the book, how to deal with tragedy.
Right. And you know, some tragedies are harder than others. You know, an earthquake, sometimes it's easier to talk about how a natural disaster works rather than when people do horrible things to other people. But usually, and whether you're talking about 9-year-olds or even 3-year-olds, that whole range of ages, usually kids pick up more than we think they do. So even if we think we're not showing them what's on TV and that they're unaware, they actually pick up more than we think, or they pick up our fear and our emotions. So check in with your kids every once in a while. Make sure they're not full of misinformation or worried about things or think they caused it. A lot of young kids will think that it's their fault somehow that some terrible news disaster happened. So there's a lot of emotions that go on. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is if she's old enough to ask, she's old enough to get an honest answer.
Right. So and I agree with that 100%. I didn't want to, you know, not tell her. I wanted to be very forthcoming, but at an age appropriate level. And that's where I think I struggle. And I think a lot of other parents do too, to keeping it age appropriate.
Exactly. So the book gives tips for, you know, what sort of things to expect them to ask and what sort of fears they might have and some scripts you might be able to pull out depending what's happening in the news, including school shootings, because children go to school and they have tornado drills and fire drills, and you can frame it just in, you know, that sort of, this is what we do, it's probably not going to happen. But we have to deal with these things, and we have to deal with them with children as young as preschool because they are often in an elementary school building.
Right. So the guiding principle in your new book is if something's bothering you, it's time to make a change. Give us an idea of what you mean by that and examples.
Right. Well, for example, often we sort of know something is wrong, but we just don't listen to our guts because everybody's doing it or that's the way the school's doing it or other people seem to think it's okay, so we go along with it. Even if our child is showing signs of distress, you know, crying or saying, I hate school. So, for example, with recess, if the principal has reduced recess so that 2 of the days are gym class, substituted for recess, and they're not really getting recess time two of their days, or something like that. Just, you're thinking, it's just not right. Something's bothering you. Well, then notice what's bothering you, first of all, and look into it. Look into the research. Look into and talk to people about it, because I think that's what's hurting our kids, is that adults, parents, teachers are afraid of talking to other adults to even raise a problem, let alone start to find the solutions. So we need to notice when we're bothered by something and have some confidence that we might be right. Because a lot of things that we think of in our gut as parents, actually, when you look into the research, it bears out that we're right, that isn't right for our kids.
Right, right. Very good point. So where can our listeners find your book, It's Okay to Go Up the Slide?
Anywhere books are sold, so in bookstores or online. And my website is heathershoemaker.com, where you can find out about both books.
Wonderful. And we'll have that link up on Mom Talk Radio. And it's Shoemakers, Shumaker.com. Thank you so much, Heather, for the book and the information about this, and for your excellent advice. And when we come back, we're joined by Tara Welty. She is the Vice President of Group Editorial Director of Scholastic Teacher Resources. We'll be right back.
Number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
As a mom who just spent a lot of money on books for my kids for summer reading, I'm pleased to welcome Tara Welty. She is the Vice President of a Group Editorial Director of Scholastic Teacher Resources, and which delivers innovative instructional ideas and teaching solutions for today's educators. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Tara.
Thanks so much. I'm so pleased to be here.
Summer reading, let's talk about it. How does Scholastic work with summer reading, with educators, with parents?
Absolutely. So Scholastic has a ton of initiatives around summer reading. We find it's extremely important for kids to read over the summer. Studies show that kids who read over the summer do better academically when they return to school. One of the big things that we do is that we have a Scholastic Summer Reading Challenge, where kids can log their reading minutes and keep track of their reading minutes over the summer as a great motivator. And another thing that we do is our magazine, Scholastic Teacher Magazine, delivers a list of our 50 favorite books of summer for summer reading.
Is the 50 list?
So the 50 list is on scholastic.com/teachermag. It originally appeared in Scholastic Teacher Magazine, which is a magazine for teachers about teaching and learning. But we've created a list just for parents that is on that site as well.
Oh, wonderful. So is this the list? Did you help pick the list?
Absolutely. So in the spring, we have the best job in the world here. We get to have pretty much all of the books from all of the publishers right at our fingertips for us
nice.
To review. So in the spring, we ask the publishers to send us their favorite books, and we go out to our teachers and librarians, especially are our hugest helpers and advocates, and ask them for their favorite books. And then when our offices are filled up with books, we just start reading, and we read hundreds and hundreds of books to get down to that list of our top 50.
Wow. So would you say they're newer books, or do you ever jump back to any of the classics?
So we have a few rules when we do the 50 list. We want them all to be new releases, so everything has to be published by June so that the books are available when summer starts. And we recommend books all throughout the year and classics throughout the year, but this list is the brand new, hot off the presses books.
Gotcha. I'm on the site right now. I just jumped over to scholastic.com/teachermag, and I see two of the books out of the three on the BFG and all that. That my daughter bought those, my 9-year-old. We just bought them.
Oh,
so
excellent.
That's awesome. Okay. So, and actually what we have is the school is pushing out the list to us. So, but they're all, it looks like a lot of them are crossing over. I see your list is a lot of the books that all three of my kids had to read. How can parents then encourage their children to read over the summer?
You know, I think one thing that is so important is just for kids to see parents reading, to see them reading themselves. I think, you know, it can be tough when you're so busy to really sit down and read something for yourself, but your kids seeing you reading and you being that reading role model really helps encourage. Joining our Scholastic Summer Reading Challenge is another great way to motivate kids. And we find that as they track their minutes and they earn rewards, they just get excited about reading. You can join that program, which is totally free at scholastic.com/summer.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. You know what? And they do anything with a reward, these kids love, right?
I know. Anything.
What's it called?
And
summer?
This one is
slash
so cool.
Summer?
It's all summer, and as they read, okay. they unlock these stories that are written by amazing authors, and such as Dave Pilkey, and they all wrote these Mad Lib-style stories that kids can go in and complete, and they are hilarious and so exciting.
So cute, so cute. So when you talk about selecting books, and this was my problem with actually my middle daughter, reading probably two or three grade levels higher, but the content, I had to be careful with the content. How do you address that in terms of matching a child with the best book for that, for him or her?
Well, one important thing is that you want kids to be able to choose the books that they want to read themselves. But of course, as a parent, you want to make sure that it's appropriate. So, you know, consulting your librarian is a great place to start. And if you have the time to actually read the book and make sure, as a parent, you know your kid the best and you know if the content is appropriate.
Right. So you have a kid and family reading report that Scholastic fielded, correct?
We absolutely do. We surveyed thousands of kids and their parents, and we asked them about their choices on reading. 91% of kids said that their favorite books are the ones that they've picked out themselves. So we know that choice for kids is really so important. And we also learned that humor is hugely important. Kids love funny books. 70% said they want a book that makes them laugh.
I think adults would say that too, right?
Yeah, anything that gives you a laugh is good.
Right. So what on the list, would you recommend, let's say, top two or three that you liked the best?
Oh, I love them all, but I am so excited to share some of them with you. I love The Key to the Extraordinary by Natalie Lloyd. Lloyd had A Snicker of Magic last year, which was a huge bestseller, and she just has this very whimsical way of writing about family and interweaving magic. This is a book about Emma Pearl Casey, who's on a mission to save her family's Boneyard Cafe. It's just such a lovely story. For the boys, I love Some Kind of Courage, which is by Dan Gemmenhart. And that's a Western set in the 1890s that feels just modern and timeless. It's just about Joseph, who is struggling with all these struggles of adolescence that just feel so relevant today, even though the book is set a long time ago. And just right. on the humor front, this book, Wolf Camp by Andrea Zuhl, it's a book about a dog who goes to wolf camp, and he learns that he's not much of a wolf at all.
Sounds great. All right, great recommendation. So tell us the website again where our listeners can find information about summer reading.
Absolutely. So scholastic.com/TeacherMag is where you can find the 50 best book list from Teacher Magazine, and scholastic.com/summer is where you can learn all about the Summer Reading Challenge.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing the great information. Thanks a lot, Tara, and have a
Thanks
great
so
summer.
Much.
And when we come back, we're joined by Dr. Mildred Payton. She is from Sierra Leone, actually, and is going to be talking to us about bullying. We'll be right back. To round out our fantastic show today, I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Mildred Payton. She is a native of West Africa and Sierra Leone specifically, and she lives in Maryland with her husband and two daughters and has a PhD in human and social services and a resume that I really can't even start to read because it would take up pretty much the whole segment. So we're going to be talking about bullying in a study that Dr. Payton is going to discuss with us. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So it's human and social services is your background. Tell us a little bit about your background and how it led you to focus on bullying.
Yes, my background is in human social services. I have a bachelor's in social work. I am in sociology, and I also pursued my master's in counseling psychology. So I've always been interested in the field of human services and helping a vulnerable population. And I also had a specific interest for working with children. Youth and family services was my area, in particular when I worked with the social services department. And again, having this interest in helping people, I knew that I had to go further in my studies to better help and serve our community. So I went ahead and pursued my doctorate degree in human services, and I specialize in social policy in hopes that whatever information or issues that are out there, that policy will be able to bring some positive changes about and make some great changes, I should say.
Right, right. So this was inspired actually by your doctoral research?
Yes, I actually, just take it back a little bit, I wrote a children's book titled A Bully on a School Bus, and that came about from my my recent research I just completed. Actually, it was sometime last June or so. I completed my study on bullying. I wanted to talk to parents who experienced their child being a victim of bullying, and based on my findings, I was just so inspired to just keep talking about bullying, so I went ahead and wrote my children's book.
And it's called A Bully on the School Bus.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's great. So is that currently in publication, or was that more?
Oh, yes, it is. It's actually available right now on Amazon online and Barnes & Noble's, Exlibris, and other online stores.
Right. Okay. So when you talk about your study, what did it reveal?
It was really fascinating. In fact, all my parents that I interviewed were very disturbed and just not satisfied with the way the schools handle their complaints towards bullying. They felt very frustrated and angry, and most of the times they were very persistent to get an answer from the school, to get some type of action to be taken towards their concern. And so that was definitely a theme that kept popping up. And their children, their symptoms were basically they cried a lot, they were afraid to go to school, they started isolating themselves from social activities. Most times they also mentioned that they were sick, they didn't want to go to school, and they lost their appetite and just demonstrated a lot of just a lack of interest in school, period. So these were the findings that came about in my study, which to me, as a mother of two young daughters, I thought it was very alarming and that something needed to be done about it.
Right. And so as a result of that, then, is that how, when the book came about, or did you and how did you basically approach that topic with the schools?
Yes, well, as a result of my study, that's where my book came about. I was inspired to do something, and my way to provide some sort of advocacy was to write my book to inspire kids to not be afraid to speak up against bullying, to show parents that, look, there are other resources available as well. When you try to talk to the school and try to get help internally, and if that doesn't work, you can always seek outside resources like at youth centers or other organizations that cater to bullying in particular. So that was definitely what came from my study, was to continue to talk about bullying and create more awareness on this topic.
Right. So you had mentioned those warning signs originally, you know, stomach aches, don't want to go to school, et cetera. So that's what parents should be really looking for, those red flags?
Absolutely. Those red flags, they're there. You know, parents just need to be in tune with their child's behavior and just know when to ask them, you know, what's going on, and just probe. Don't just, you know, ask them, how was your day today? You know, find out more, what made your day bad or what made it good. You know,
right.
We can always get information from our kids if we just listen and just, you know, talk to them more.
Right. Absolutely. So where can we, it's, your website is drmildredpeyton.com. It's PEYTON.com, correct?
Exactly. That's right.
Great. So we can find information about this, this topic on your website.
Yes, absolutely.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And best of luck. And I'm sure you're going to be continuing to do great, great work on this very important topic for our kids. And thank you, everyone, so much for listening to this edition of Mom Talk Radio. Again, happy 4th of July. I hope you have a wonderful week. Be careful out there with the fireworks. And of course, wear your sunscreen if you're out at the beach or the lake or outside barbecuing this weekend. Have a great week. And we'll be back with another great edition of Mom Talk Radio.